In today's seminar, we're going to explore these issues of internationalism from two distinctive perspectives. We have Ben Page from UCL, who's going to reflect on theorizing space relationally within his own research, especially migration research, and Dave Humphreys, who circulated the last chapter of his new book, Long Term, where he discusses how to move the environmental agenda forward within the context of international conventions, state power, and the power of transnational corporations. And it's quite interesting because both environment and migration summon up the international in really interesting ways. They're clearly boundary crossers in their formation and effects, but equally they materialize in really interesting spatial ways. And both are never far from the news, unfortunately. So we have all this stuff about the strikes of foreign workers and, environment. we have two people here today who've done really interesting, innovative work about thinking spatially about the international. Ben Page, who's worked on Cameroon, both in terms of the infrastructures of water and most recently on the migration of Cameroonians. But he's also done other work on water infrastructures in Nigeria. And most recently, he's published a book, Development in the African Diaspora, Place and the Politics of Home, last year. This is at the end of a three-year ESRC project.
Yep, four years.
It
was meant to be 3 years.
And Dave Humphreys, who, interestingly, has travelled the seas as a merchant seaman, has been a management accountant, and done loads of travelling also in his sort of research on environmental degradation. He served as an advisor to the World Commission on Forests and Sustainable Development and is a member of the Scientific Advisory Board of the European Forest Institute. And his book has recently won the ISA award at the International International Studies Association last year. So I'd like to welcome both of you and tell you a little bit about how we plan to sort out the rest of the afternoon. So it's about half an hour for you, Ben, and then followed straight after by between 10 and 15 minutes, Dave, and then we'll take questions. So over to you, Ben.
Great. Thank you for the invitation to come back. Last time I was here, two or three years ago, I had just returned from that famous geographical location, the field, and had an overabundance of data. And I remember sort of sitting, not in this room, but somewhere over there, watching Steve, who was in the chair, getting really fidgety as the kind of hour approached, and I still obviously hadn't come anywhere close to finishing. So clearly, Jenny has issued me with very clear instructions and has also told me what to talk about. So, which is good. It is good, because left to my own devices, when I'm invited out, I fall back on the security of telling stories about places, which is fine, and I love doing it, and is really easy, but it's good to be told to think more conceptually, perhaps, about space, which is not something I feel enormously comfortable doing, but let's see how we get on. The ideas papers that I enjoy listening to as an audience member are ones like my colleague and friend Matthew Gandhi is a past master of these kind of sort of wonderful hot air balloon held together by a thin skein of allusions and quotations and references, and somehow this magnificent edifice rises slowly into the air. I think if I was kind of to go for that approach, it would be a bit like the hot air balloon at the in the opening chapter of Enduring Love. So I kind of gone for something which is a bit more confessional, as you, I hope, have seen from the paper. And the argument, therefore, is one that's quite sort of half thought through and certainly doesn't come to a satisfactory conclusion. And as a caveat before I go further, I don't want to pretend to be an expert Lacanian. I find these ideas really provoking and really interesting and really unfamiliar and exciting, but I still feel that I'm kind of scratching at the surface of what they're trying to get at. So I'm not trying to set myself up as an expert in that field. Last time I was here, I began with an opening quotation from the sometimes inscrutable post-colonial theorist and Cameroonian Achille Mbembe. So this time I thought I'd go for something a little less highbrow. So this is a quotation from the Colombian chanteuse Shakira. Lucky you were born that far away, so we could both make fun of distance. Lucky does I love a foreign land for the lucky fact of your existence. The line I like is make fun of distance, and I suppose that's what I'm trying to do, is to kind of tease myself a bit about the way space is still often distance and not much more in my own thinking about it, or not so much my own thinking about it, my own practice of geography. So the argument that I kind of want to develop is that we do make as a discipline, and here, you know, trying to strike this absurd pose of speaking for the discipline, knowing that the discipline is varied and multiple and has all sorts of different divisions within it, but striking that pose, that we have a disciplinary claim that we kind of own space. Intellectually, that we're responsible for space. Space is our thing. Space is our business. And that's perhaps why so many geographers seem so hurt by the fact that there are, I think, two geographers cited in the reference list of this year's World Development Report, which is badged as geography. So we claim to own space. And I think that our thinking about transnationalism and it was very nice of Parvati to mention the book. I should also mention that Claire Mercer and Martin Evans are very much co-authors of this project. So when I say we, I'm dragging them down with me. We've found thinking about space in this way and reading in the literature on transnationalism that geographical claim to bring space into the story, to do space, is tremendously useful and has undoubtedly added a great deal of richness and a great deal of interest to that debate. So the conversation between space and transnationalism, which has, as it happens, primarily been a conversation between geographers and other disciplines who are interested in global networks and global connections and global flows, the linkages across national borders, that's been, I think it's been a fruitful conversation, and there's a slide that I want to spend some time thinking through, which kind of tries to make some claims about why that's been that has been a successful project and a useful project. However, and this is where the paper kind of in the second half turns confessional. I think actually that we spend far more time talking about space than actually doing space in our geography. That the claim, the sort of tentative claim here, and this is where the kind of the psychoanalytic ideas seem to kind of suggest themselves, was that this might be a symptom. This is might be a symptom of geography, that we actually have an aversion to talking about space, and that we could learn something, that our symptoms want to talk to us, and we could learn something from attending to the fact that even though we claim to be doing space, actually we don't do it nearly as much as we imagine we do. And that's where it all gets a bit uncertain towards the end, because the implication of from a psychoanalytic perspective, one of the implications of a symptom is that it's related to some kind of trauma or kind of anxiety, and so it's kind of the question that I want to end on, perhaps to open things up and provoke people a bit, is kind of if this is the case, if we are deluding ourselves and we imagine that we're the space discipline in terms of our practice, then what possible trauma is that, or is that a useful way to think about that difference? So the paper that you've all seen has two halves. And one is very much a resume of where we are at in that conversation between geography and other disciplines' interest in transnationalism. So it's meant to be an outward-facing public discussion of here's what you have learnt from us. Here's what you have learnt by bringing space into discussions of transnationalism. Here is the added value. And then the second half of the paper is the thinking through of our personal experience of trying to do that in this ESRC project that we've been going through for the last 3 or 4 years. So that's clearly a kind of an outward-facing public, inward-facing private binary. And it kind of hangs on a kind of a move which I think even for people who are sympathetic to psychoanalysis, which I know isn't, and psychoanalysis theory, which is, I know, isn't everybody anyway, is also a kind of perhaps a step too far, which is to move from a kind of conception of the psychoanalytic as belonging to the human subject and then to try and turn that round, as some Lacanians have done, and I'm particularly here drawing on the work of Shoshana Fellman and her discussion of Edgar Allan Poe, and trying to, in her case, think about the way that whilst earlier versions of psychoanalytic theory kind of used an analysis of a poet's poetry to then speak about the psyche of that particular poet, she wanted to turn that round and talk about, reverse the approach, and to analyse a particular poet as a symptom of poetry. So part of what I'm kind of trying to claim here is to kind of replace poetry in that sentence with geography. So the aim is to account for geography in psychoanalytical terms has traditionally meant to analyse geography as a symptom of a particular geographer. I'd like to reverse this approach and analyse a particular geographer as a symptom of geography. So I'm trying to reflect on our project, a piece of geography, as a symptom of geography more broadly. I don't think it's going to take half an hour. Is that all right? So I kind of, when I was doing that, and it kind of this kind of relates to some of what we've been wrestling with in the project, which is about identity politics, and particularly in the case of the global African networks that we've been looking at, which are hometown associations, so groups of African migrants who affiliate wherever they are in the world on the basis of some shared connection to a hometown. We've been thinking about them in relation to identity politics, and identity seemed to be increasingly problematic to us because the way that people were being identified from outside by others and the way they identified themselves seemed to be distinctly different, so that the identity politics that was at play seemed to have a lot of slippages in terms of an internal and an external. So we started looking at ways in which identity and subjectivity were distinguished or compared or contrasted. And the contrast that seems to me to have some traction is the idea that identity is something that is produced by a collaborative process between an individual and other individuals around them. So it's an outward-facing project in which multiple people produce the identity of the person who's under discussion or the group who's under discussion. Whereas subjectivity is an awareness of the fact that that's never actually right, that the labels that you're being labelled with, the identity that you're being given, isn't the identity that your own internal experience of yourself is, so that there's a slippage or there's a difference or there's a distance perhaps between identity and subjectivity, and that difference is the difference between the way your identity is publicly constructed and your private experience of what it is, the fact that your identity never quite matches your sense of self. So we wanted to kind of, so what I'm trying to do with the paper is kind of think about the first part as sort of geography's identity, and the second part in a sense as somehow something akin to geography's subjectivity, in those, having defined those terms in those ways. And much more tentatively, kind of also trying to draw a distinction between self and subject, and the self in this sense kind of seems to have close affinities to identity, in that when we think about ourselves, it can be a project that we can work on. It's a project that, you know, somebody who's under analysis kind of works on with their therapist. And in that sense, you can imagine the project that this seminar series seems to be undertaking of kind of thinking about self is akin to that. It is, geography's self is something that geography can invest in. It can put effort, it can put work into understanding space more effectively or more meaningfully or something like that. So, like identity, it's something that you can be active in producing. But at the same time, because identity is never perfect, because the fit between identity and subjectivity is never perfect, it also means that that link between self and identity means that this is a masquerade, and that in a sense we're deluding ourselves to imagine that we're ever going to achieve this sort of perfect fit in which we've kind of resolved geography's doubts or anxieties about space or its claims over space. So I was anxious that the kind of structuring of this paper as first half public, second half private seemed a bit clunky, and I was trying to kind of link those to other terms which capture what it is I'm trying to get at. The kind of the visual, with apologies to being recorded audio where they won't see the visual, but the visual is not meant to be very clever other than to express the fact that I'm not trying to draw overly strong limits and to get away from overly strong links between these terms. I'm specifically not trying to draw up two columns in which one column you might kind of see public identity and self, private subjectivity and subject. So I'm trying to get away from that. That's the only point of this visual, but I was trying to find some way of expressing the fact that I'm not drawing an overly strong set of relationships. So that kind of then leaves the question of, you know, if you're tolerant enough to kind of go with these ideas and even more tolerant to kind of consider that the argument that geography, you know, does have an aversion to thinking through space properly, and that aversion is a symptom. So taking all those, you know, well, what's the point? I mean, where would that get you if you accepted all those? And as so often happens, it's much easier to explain what the point isn't than what the point might be. I mean, it seems to me to be, what I'm not trying to do is to kind of set up a difference in order to then reduce that difference to zero. So I'm not trying to say geography claims to do space, geography doesn't actually do space as well as it claims to do it. The way forward is to reduce that to zero and you know, identify that we have a problem. That's not what I'm trying to say. It's not about resolving that. I think in the paper, I kind of, in a kind of moment of desperation, kind of came up with a sentence which kind of threw in both the words desire and lack, and sort of, it was a really lazy kind of oh God, throw it all over to Lacan and kind of see what kind of sticks. But I think what I'm trying to do is perhaps something more modest than that, or more open, which is to identify the difference, so to kind of convince you perhaps that there is a difference between geography's identity and its relationship to space and geography's subjectivity and its relation to space, but to use that just as a vehicle for thinking about the way the discipline works and the way we practice our discipline. And possibly, and this is some of the material at the bottom, where I would take this forward in the future to try and connect it logically through, to try and be true to the framework that I'm thinking in. So that would, I mean, the classic Lacanian position would be to say that, you know, we're not subjects at the level of our identity, we're subjects at the level of our desire, and the problem with that is that, you know, we all that we lack that our desire is premised on a fantasy of being whole, And it's a fantasy because in order to be a subject, you have to enter into the intersubjective realms of language and law. And so because you know the only way you can be a subject is through language, through intersubjectivity, you abandon all possibility of being a whole individual. And that's, it seems to me, is to be the essence of what desire is, the desire to be whole, and why we lack the possibility of doing so, that you can't get back to that wholeness. So in that case, and this is where you get kind of stuck in kind of object causes of desire and things like that, there's a sense in which what we're trying to do and what the benefit of going down this road might be would be to try and find some language in which we could articulate something of geography's desire as its, as an expression of its subject. And I kind of started thinking about, wondered whether you could link that to some of those kind of history of geography discussions about essence and strategic essentialism, and thinking about space in this way. I was thinking about that point that I made to start with about the way that it is very useful, and we do get a long way with space, and by inserting space into other interdisciplinary debates, we actually do have a real value, straightforward, helpful, productive contribution to make. Maybe that's the kind of the temptation, maybe that's the sense in which, if only it were true that geography were about space, that would be wonderful. You know, we would be able to kind of stop navel gazing and angsting and being anxious about the subject of our subject, and you know, perhaps that would be a way forward. And in that case, is space acting as an object cause of desire, one of these kind of things that we fantasize about as being the possibility of completing us, finishing us, making us whole? Okay, so that's the argument and the rationale, the two parts of the paper. The first one, as I say, kind of tries to think about the way that we have publicly discussed transnationalism and space. So this quotation from an introduction to Peter Jackson and Phil Krang and Claire Dwyer's book on transnationalism space. Studies of the economic, political and cultural dimensions of transnationalism have characteristically underplayed the transformation of space that is involved in the evolution of transnational forms, which I tried to... the familiar geographical refrain. Here we are, here's a conversation going on. We've identified this thing called transnationalism, but you've all forgotten to take space seriously. You must take space seriously. Or, in other words, as I put it, it's a bit like the Daz doorstep challenge, that, this is new transnationalism now with added space, you know, and we're going to make it better. And I think we do. You know, I think there's a lot of ways, and these are, I'm trying to kind of use the examples from our project. But I think paying attention, attending to questions of space, has brought out the way that different models of transnationalism are a product of context, the context both in which they are produced and which are the object of their study. So if you study transnationalism on the US-Mexico border, you're going to get a very different conception of transnationalism from studying transnationalism if you look at Asia-Pacific Rim. You know, these are different in all sorts of ways in terms of their, you know, the economic role that migrants play, the function that migrants, the way that migrants are imagined and represented in kind of media. And certainly, kind of, we found that in our very narrow study of Cameroonian and Tanzanian networks, when you go into that moment in a research project where you kind of blinker yourself off from other readings and other ideas in order to get the work done, we kind of found ourselves producing what we thought were distinctive elements that seemed to be unusual from other things we were reading about in transnationalism. For example, the kind of the ways in which associations persist over time and how they persist over time seem to be something that other people weren't talking about. Our associations have very long histories. So that's one way that kind of paying attention to space kind of has added complications to models of transnationalism in a useful way. A second point seems to me that looking now not at the models and the ideas and the concepts, but looking at the specific transnational communities, so following global networks, you find that different transnational formations have different geographies, and that might be geographies in a very simple sense of the patterns that they make over space, of where they go, with different associations in northern Nigeria, not far from where we were working, have far more east-west, or particularly east, kind of a mapping than the associations that we were interested in, which were mostly kind of north-facing. So they're kind of both the Tanzanian and the Cameroonian associations, sort of, if you were to look at their geography in a very simple sense, it's distinct. So, paying attention to those differences has been revealing and productive and has been helpful within transnational studies of transnationalism. But, of course, you could also think about that in terms of relations to place, that different transnational communities have different relations to place and different transnational communities move in different ways. So, kind of, again, flagging space within the specific context of transnational communities was productive in that sense. The third kind of big result was, I think, and this has been known since after Brahe's book on cartographies of diaspora, was that diasporic space or transnational space is interesting, and obviously, Doreen's kind of frequent discussions of Kilburn kind of would really kind of be a kind of a paradigmatic of kind of the way that it draws attention to the fact that it's not just the people who move, it's not just the transnational communities, it's not just the migrants within a diasporic space, it's about the people who were there already, the people who were the children of the people who were there already, the people who are the children of the people who arrived. It's not just about migrant communities, and diaspora spaces are spaces in which both the mobile and the stationary are experiencing a transformation of the relationship with that place. The work that Phil Krang has done on food would be a typical example of the way in which somebody can move in and out of diaspora space for the purposes of having a meal. It might be a very transitory presence within that space, but it might be quite different, and it would be completely ignored if you were looking at transnational communities per se. If you only look at migrant communities, you kind of miss the transformations that are going on with other people who aren't badged as migrants, but who are also occupying that shared space, particularly within cities, obviously. And then fourthly, there's a point about language. And I think foregrounding the spaces actually helps us to the fact that transnationalism is kind of cut through with all these spatial metaphors, with all these geographical metaphors. And this is where I think we've gone least far in the kind of process of tying of the conversation between space and transnationalism. So whilst you can look at the achievements, the political achievements of geographers within this field. Think, obviously, I mean, the hugely frequently cited paper on the hype of hybridity, the Catherine Mitchell paper, which kind of tremendously successfully kind of brought home the way in which early transnationalism lauded particular social groups, particular forms of mobility at the expense of other social groups and other forms of mobility. And geographers have a really honourable kind of track record over the last decade of, the work of the team at Queen Mary is an obvious example of how finding other stories, other transnational stories, have and drawing, having a much stronger sense of social justice, much stronger interest in the stickiness of place and the way that, transnationalism isn't all about deterritorialized, free-floating elites with kind of touchdown once in a while, but is actually about far slower, less glamorous processes and people as well. So that's really successful, but I think less successful has been sort of trying to think through the way that the metaphors, the geography metaphors that we use, treat geography as essentially absolute space as distance, and probably because you've got to hold, and my own sense of why this happens is it's, you've got to hold something still while you kind of study other things, and that there's a sense in which treating space as distance is is almost like a sort of confounding variable if you're kind of thinking about the kind of sort of this is a metaphorically in terms of stats or whatever, that you can kind of take space out of the picture by treating space as distance. And perhaps that's why it happens so much. But the whole genre of writing in transnationalism is kind of has all these metaphors in which borders, nations, territories are treated unproblematically as containers in which history happens. And of course, we all know from our first year days as first year geography undergraduates that's not what space is. That we all know that space is relational, and we all know that it's more than a container, and that space is produced, and we've all had that read into us. But and this is really what the second half of the paper is all about: do we actually do that, and what does it tell us about our discipline? If you buy my argument, perhaps we don't.